And hello to Jacob Banks, as if the afternoon could get any better.
Right.
Here comes Jacob.
Yeah. I mean, I'm no hero now. I see what's happening. This is quite incredible.
I just get
to sort of come in when the party's in progress. I mean,
in full swing.
It's so exciting to see the support for you, Mindy, and for this show in the Quad Cities. I mean, clearly this is more than just, you know, entertainment on in the background for people. This is a real like life changer, which I think is really cool. And this is the thing about the fund drives, which is, on one hand, it's sort of it's an ask, and it's very relentless. I know I've sat in several hours before.
You've helped me, but
however, when it goes like it's going now, and you see the support that's out there for VIK and the difference it makes in people's lives, it's pretty awesome. I feel very proud to have my tiny part of you know, perspective with Mindy, and it's just great. It's great to be here, great to be back, and you're killing it. I think that's beautiful. That's a good thing, by the way. Killing it. For those who aren't clear with the, I've got the lingo because I work with them, you know, with Gen Z. But yes. If you didn't know, killing it is good. So
same as slaying it. You're slaying it.
Oh, we are slaying it now.
That's right. We can get even this a little holiday. Good.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, lingo like that. Too.
I'm very, very not up on it, by the way.
But you better be, though, my friend.
I have to be.
Lots of little kids that are going to be using all kinds of
my goodness.
Hip new logo.
So here, well, I don't know how these kids are going to turn out. I'll tell this funny story. I'll embarrass my 12-year-old. So, most 12-year-olds, I don't know what most 12-year-olds listen to, but my daughter, you know, I drive her to her youth orchestra every week, and we just basically rotate through operas. She just wants a different opera, and, you know, we made it all the way through Il Trovatore, and then we went to Dialogues of the Carmelites, and now we are on to Die Meistersinger. Which is a quote-unquote comedy, which is Wagner light, which is not light at all. But she finds it hilarious. And, you know, there's this character in the Meistersinger, Beckmesser, who's sort of he's criticizing everyone, and he's sort of the head of this guild, but he's always just telling everyone how bad they are. So a couple weeks ago, I was out of town at a concert, and there were multiple critics at the three concerts, but there were like press reviews of these concerts. And so I said, you know, Hannah, tonight, I was on the phone. I said, tonight there's going to be a critic there from the Wall Street Journal. And she goes, you mean like Beckmesser? And I'm like, yeah, like Beckmesser. Like, what 12-year-old on the planet is like drawing connections to like Wagnerian opera when I'm saying that there's a critic coming?
Music critics, yeah.
So you say, you know, I've got to get hip with the lingo. I don't know. It's like 19th century lingo or something. It was fine by me, you know. But anyway.
Well, they start throwing the word anon around, you'll know.
Exactly. Oh, this has happened. This has happened multiple times.
Oh, I'll get to that anon.
Yes, yes. No, exactly. And the Shakespeare references, too. You know, the washing the hands and like, oh, good work, Lady Macbeth over there. So anyway, we have fun, but that's not what this is about. We're
in a roundabout way getting back to our love for the music. We're obviously very passionate about the music and enthusiastic to talk about it.
Absolutely.
With our listeners. And even on this last call for music lovers in this short year-end fund drive, which, by the way, if you're wanting to make that pledge and have it matched dollar for dollar by members of the Challenger Circle, go to WVIK.org. Or call us at 794-7500. And, you know, there's such a wealth of interesting music that's coming up on this third Masterworks concert. For me, it was like a no-brainer about which to talk about.
Where do you start?
But then I felt bad.
You had it all figured out. Let's just face it.
How do you not, you know, say, but this, I love this piece too. And I mean, because each piece is unique. It represents such a different timeline of musical development, as well as in the individual composers' lifetimes. I mean, we could spend probably four or five Music 101s,
no doubt,
just talking about this Masterworks
Absolutely.
Concert.
Well, it was easy because you have a guest coming tomorrow, correct?
Yes.
I mean, in one sense, it was easy because
we could take
the Britain Serenade, which is, you'll hear all about that tomorrow, ye listeners of Mindy's, because the soloist will be here.
Correct. Kareem Suleiman. Yep.
Mm-hmm. We'll be here to tenor. One of the soloists, I need to be careful, Mark Zyla, you know, is the other soloist.
I know, right?
There's two soloists. Well, but the tenor will be here to talk about that unbelievable piece. Yes. It's just, you know, you could fill a month of Music 101s with all that goes into the Britain Serenade, but we won't have to because you're going to cover that tomorrow. So that got off the table. Really was no debate, Mindy, because we talked, you know, well, there are these other, the Elgar Serenade for Strings, beautiful piece, possible. There's the first horn concerto of Strauss, but for you, there was no contest, right? There was one piece that must be discussed, and it is
Mozart's Linz Symphony.
You said this is your favorite symphony
of Mozart.
Of Mozart's, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Let's be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, can you tell me why? Oh. Like, I love this piece, but I'm curious why this would be like
Professor
your favorite.
Banks.
It's turned into therapy session here. Right? It's like let's go back 10 years. How did you feel then?
So, or suddenly I feel like I am a student. Begging, right. Like, oh, now please explain.
There's no quiz. Oh, exactly. Yeah, no.
Break it down.
No,
why?
Talk from the heart. Yes, exactly. Is it the harmonic progressions? And if so, which one? What about it grabs you?
I think everything.
Yeah.
That's an easy explain away. But
no.
I remember talking about this symphony years and years and years ago with another staff member here at VIK who no longer works here. Mm-hmm. That was a piece that they were also particularly fond of. And sort of, I think what we came to in that discussion was Mozart's real, I mean, he had so many compositional strengths. He was as a composer,
right.
Obviously could again, fill Music 101s for the rest right. of the year, just right. talking about Mozart and right. his unique abilities.
In every genre. People forget is that he wrote the best, not only wrote the best opera, he wrote the best Singspiel, the German folk kind of, you know, people's opera, the best opera seria and Clemenza di Tito, the best opera buffa, the best combination of all of them, which is Don Giovanni, and that's just opera. The best piano concerto, the best clarinet concerto, the best, I mean, he was just, he mastered, and very few composers after him did so.
Right.
Like you'd have, you know, Brahms writing an opera, you can't imagine it. He mastered the symphony, but not the opera. And then you have Verdi, who mastered the opera, but couldn't do the symphony. So it's like Mozart's this sort of Renaissance man. And you're right. So it's like, where do you start?
Yeah, there was nothing he could not write. You're right. I mean, even solo works, chamber. But anyway, the first few things that you mentioned relate directly to why I think I
really?
Love the Linz Symphony.
How cool.
Because he was such a consummate writer for opera
yep.
and choral music.
Yeah.
Everything was just instinctively a song for him, I
absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely.
Every line, everything in every one of his works sings in some way in its own unique musical language. But nowhere do I think does he sing, quote unquote, symphonically or orchestrally or in a concert work more than what he does in the Linz Symphony.
Wow, that is so, what a cool, I can't argue. I mean, I think, I can't think of counterexamples, certainly among the symphonies. I mean, there are many glorious pieces, but you're right. And the only thing I'd add to that is that you're right about the singing line. The other thing is about the many subtle shades of expression and emotion that come out in Mozart. And it's very easy to talk about this in operatic works, you know, just like what kind of sad is Pamina? You know, I mean, is she like sad, like devastated? Is she sad, like wistfully sad? I mean, he manages not just to express emotion in his operas, but like very, very fine gradations.
Yes.
Absolutely. So it's all in the music. But the thought that he would, you know, we'd like to be very modernist and say, well, yes, but these are instrumental works, and therefore, without the text, you couldn't possibly know, but you could possibly know. He's doing the same thing with his instrumental music. There's the same shades of, you know, and we'll get, I hope we'll hear a little bit of the slow introduction of Linz Symphony, because, you know, it's slow. And we'll talk a little bit maybe about the form of a symphony, but why don't you want to listen? Because there's like, you know, symphonies, almost all symphonies in the classical format, form, start with a fast movement. The question is always, is there a slow introduction or not? This is something, you know, some composers like a slow introduction in the symphony. I mean, you know, Mozart used it sometimes and not others. Haydn sometimes, not others. Beethoven, you know. So it's always the question when you sit down for a symphony you've never heard, is there a slow introduction? In the case of Linz, yes, there is. And you might ask, okay, well, what is the character of this slow introduction? Why don't we listen? Because there's not just one character in this slow introduction. Should we listen to the opening? Good.
Absolutely. Okay.
So yeah, that will. So how many characters have we already seen in this opera, and it's just the slow introduction,
right? Right.
You know, and what I love is so the whole thing begins in this like pomposo, like it's very pompous. It's very ba 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 ba. We've got these dotted rhythms, and then almost immediately, you know, there's a few seconds of that, and then all of a sudden it's like it's almost like you know someone makes a grand procession onto stage, and then like looks around and says. Am I in the right room? You know, so there's a little bit of like, there's this sort of like hesitation and then, you know, thinking it over. And then, of course, the bump, 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 the steady pulse is sort of like, no, you can do this. You can do this. And then finally, the slow introduction ends with one more like pompous statement. It's like, yes, I am in charge of this. Yeah. I am in charge of this symphony. And it's not hard to follow this. I mean, there's nothing obscure about the emotional expression. But I was listening after, based on what you said, to the line and, you know, the vocality of especially the bassoon and oboe solos, which, you know, it's a fun symphony because there's no flutes and no clarinets, right? So they're really holding down they're like, I guess it's up to us.
It's us.
Right, exactly. We now's our chance.
Yeah. Oboe and bassoon.
Right, and bassoon's like, we'll mess it up. I know it. Yeah. It's so much fun. So yeah, I mean, I think what you said about the vocal line is just really cool. I mean, you know, it's not bad for 4 days.
I was just thinking that, you know, again, you as a composer, imagine, you know, rolling into town and suddenly being greeted effusively by the mayor and all of the important people in that town and the townspeople. It's like, Mozart's coming.
Right.
You know, here's Jacob Banks. He and Kara are here. Jacob, write us a melody. And
right.
You're going, okay. And yeah, having to crank something out in
Absolutely.
4 days because he felt very strongly, you know, they were shown so much love in Linz that this was his way to sort of reciprocate.
Absolutely.
And the fact that this is there,
right,
that this symphony is just there for him 4 days, scritch, 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 scritch on the manuscript paper.
Right.
And we have this luscious symphony.
Absolutely. He's so, and I sense too his pride as a composer that, you know, that he easily, they could easily have performed an existing work of his, but he wouldn't do.
That wouldn't do.
You know, we needed to have something new and something appropriate and something, you know, I don't know whether there were fees exchanged and whether a new piece would permit him to make money where he hadn't before. I have no idea about the background of that. I do get a kick out of Linz though, because people often don't know, you know. Okay, so it's an Austrian town. It's actually like I say it's very much like the Quad Cities because it's right on the river, right? It's on the Danube River, and it's halfway. It's in like middle. It's halfway between Salzburg and Vienna. So it's like a big stop. The family. In fact, there's a really I laugh at this. There's an early letter from Leopold when he was on tour with Nannerl and little Wolfgang, you know, to his child prodigies. He's sort of like showing them all around.
Showing them around.
Well, and the only thing I found, so I looked at his letters when I was preparing this, and the only thing I found in Linz in those early years was that they stopped there. He's writing a letter to his friend, and he said, you know, little Wolfgang got a cold in Linz. And so I'm picturing like some historical marker, you know, Mozart sneezed here or something, you know, like little Mozart was, you know how crazy the Austrians are for Mozart. So you can imagine that rather than getting a cold the second time, he decided to leave the gift of this symphony. Pretty cool. And, you know, kind of poignant in a way. I mean, he and his wife were returning to Vienna. He would never in his lifetime return to Salzburg.
Right, right.
Which was his home. And their infant son had died a few months prior. They had left him in Vienna in the care of a wet nurse. And he died, you know, several weeks later. So they were on their way back to Vienna, having not been back since the loss of this child. I mean, you know, I wouldn't go looking for such things when listening to the symphony. But the point is, it's an interesting and kind of poignant spot in his, you know, in his life, because he's headed back to Vienna, where he would, you know, he would travel yet a little bit after that, but never back to his hometown in Salzburg, which is really a bring the bride home to meet the family kind of trip.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I love your description of Leopold as the Austria's Got Talent, you know, dragging my kids around.
Exactly.
But that's literally what it was for the bulk of his childhood. He never really got to have a normal, quote-unquote, childhood, whatever normal childhoods were in those days. He still didn't get any of that. He was constantly on display, constantly performing, playing, writing. You know, from the time he was 3 or 4, he was already crafting melodies.
Right.
So again, his father understood his unique gifts. By all accounts, the sister Nannerl was also extremely
highly talented,
gifted as well. So it's no surprise that, you know, Leopold saw a way to sort of fill the family coffers by, you know, hauling these kids all around.
Well, and he was in the family business. I mean,
exactly.
Let's face it, that's what he.
That's
know,
what
it's
he
just
did.
Like Mozart and Son, really. I mean, he had expectations, and you know, we like to psychologize. There's a lot of psychologizing about the relationship between Leopold and Wolfgang. But I think, you know, just relationships were very different period. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just read just a standard letter between friends from this period, it was very – so things that seem emotionally fraught or angry in letters to us, even in translation – you know, was there tension there? Absolutely. Was there anger? Probably. But really, you know, there's not. I always think of Clara Schumann. She's another one, you know, whose father was actually far worse than Leopold Mozart was. But she was devoted to her father from the end. She never gave a hint of resentment. She probably had some, but it was just social norms that said you wouldn't
you
respond
don't express
such a way
it or
to your
exactly.
or to your elders. So,
right, right.
Anyway.
Yep, there was the showing of respect for someone who had sort of helped lay the groundwork.
Her teacher.
I love that you put that way. And we know that Mozart had actually even written to Leopold as they were either coming into Linz or returning from Linz.
Really?
And he wrote to him about the success of the symphony that he had written like in 4 days.
Wow.
And that the people had been so enthusiastic about it.
Right. It doesn't sound like a really super problematic relationship.
Not really.
You know, I mean, it's just
for whatever
different.
It's, ups and downs were.
Right.
We should tell people quickly, we have had, thank you to Frank Dittrich of Davenport. Frank, my friend, thank you again for heeding music's call and making a call this afternoon. A listener from Bettendorf, Kate Ducalo of Moline. Kate, thank you so much. And Pamela Saunders. Pamela, thank you in Rock Island. And wow, we are just about $1,000 away from our total goal of $20,000.
And that's a total goal for this show?
That was for the whole drive.
That's for the drive.
When we started back on Giving Tuesday, we had a $20,000 goal that we hoped to achieve by 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Wow.
And we're just $1,000 away.
I mean, really, $1,000, and that's really wonderful.
We have about
wonderful.
6 minutes to go in the program. Members of the Challenger Circle will match all pledges dollar for dollar for another 6 minutes. So WVIK.org, WVIK.org. Make that year-end gift. Thank you. Or call us at 309-794-7500. So again, Jacob, my friend, as someone who writes music for a living, how would you have approached something like that had someone basically expected or you had felt that you had wanted to reciprocate by writing a piece of music? Do you think you could crank out something in 3 or 4 days? That's probably not a very fair question because everybody composes differently.
It's true, but it's an interesting question and one that actually sort of tortures me quite a bit because, I mean, let's just face it.
It would be the kind of piece too.
Well, it really would. And It's not merely, I don't want to say this clearly. I would Mozart's talents and mine's a drop in his ocean, right? So you've got the talents. You also have the great difference in, I have equally inferior talent to Beethoven. Beethoven wrote 9 symphonies and Mozart wrote 41. Haydn wrote 104 plus, right? We know a few extras as well. So just the MO of a composer at the end of the 17th century was to be able to crank out music at the pace that Mozart did. The fact that Mozart was able to do it at such a high level is what's really remarkable. As a composer, it's sobering and especially at his age. I mean, he would be obviously younger than me. I mean, I'm 39 now, and his life was over when he was 39. So, as a composer, you just kind of, you walk into a situation, you hope to write something that's appropriate. Whether I could do it in 4 days, I'm not so sure, but I've been in similar situations where, and this is one thing that I try to take from Mozart as a composer is, and this just had to do, I think, with social expectations for composers. It wasn't necessarily self-expression for him. And I think this is important for people to realize that, from Beethoven onward, we see the composer is sort of bearing his soul and he's sort of like sheltered off in this, the cone of silence, right? From Get Smart, where the composer is just this isolated individual, writing for history. But for Mozart, he wanted to write something, A, beautiful, B, excellent, but also C, appropriate. And in fact, that was what Haydn said about Mozart to his father when he was evaluating him as a boy. He said, "The boy has taste," which basically meant he knew what was appropriate.
He was able to discern. He had the gift of discernment,
which is kind of amazing. Aside from just like having. So again, when you try to look at these biographical things and then try to like map it one to one onto the music. He viewed himself sort of like, upper level livery. I mean, it was like, it was part of the, he wanted to do something that was appropriate and that fit sort of his social role as somebody who created art to be enjoyed ultimately. So I try like him as best I can to write appropriately as funny as it seems. I've had plenty of inappropriate works in the past and it never goes well. So.
But you're also, again, writing sometimes from a different place, when you were talking about all the things that Mozart and Constanze were facing as they were writing back, which would be to have to come into a household without their infant child and all of this, that doesn't necessarily mean or is reflected by this rather somber gravitas-laden beginning to what ends up being a very lighthearted and singable symphony. Every single movement, you'll hear it, and you'll find yourself humming it for a while till the next movement starts, and then you'll start humming that one. So this was not really reflective, per se, of what he was emotionally feeling at the time. And that's another thing that's different for you as a composer in this time. You can kind of tread those lines if you want. You can put a lot of emotion into
even
it or not.
I will say, even Tchaikovsky, who had, you know, his super, super emotional music, he said, my saddest times make my happiest music. My happiest times make my saddest music. So, who knows?
Oh, well, the clock on the wall is unrelenting. Darn it.
Next month.
I know. Just a short month away, and we'll be back talking about our next venture into
adventure.
Music.
Absolutely.
Yes. As always, Jacob, thank you so much for stopping by. It's, again, I feel like there's so much more we could go into about the Lint Symphony, but please go hear the concert this weekend and hear it performed live. It is truly just one of those amazing works. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Mindy. And thank you to all the listeners for your support of VIK.
Absolutely. I'll echo that. Thank you to everyone who called this afternoon. Marketplace is coming up next.